Well, for the first time in history, the role of the New Zealand Defence Force and the Gallipoli Anzac Day Dawn service is up in the air. The continuous luggage containing instruments and uniforms were lost in transit during the Dubai floods last week. Dubai International Airport has since found some of the bags, and the first of these have arrived in Turkey. Efforts to source those instruments, they did prove tricky by all accounts. The drummer learning how to make the official drum beat from two spoons from the cutlery drawer. So with us for an update, we have John McLeod, the NZDF Gallipoli commemoration lead. John, kia ora. Nice to have you here.
Kia ora, and nice to be able to talk to you from a very iconic location.
Absolutely, yeah. John. Yeah, give us an update. How's the group going?
Obviously they're a bit disappointed, but they're pretty focused on what we can do and what, and I think we're in a good position. We're not quite in a good position. We've got 42 of 65, but of course the way the world works, the ones we don't have a lot of the kit that we want. So we don't have enough banned items. Mm. We are going to be able to have a catafalque guard with people have swapped uniforms some of the uniforms have been resized to make sure we've got the people can wear them, and we've got a guitar, and I think it won't be perfect, but it will be, at least we'll be doing our job and people will feel really proud of it.
Fantastic. Mm. It must go on. Now, Leonie.
And I think it just highlights that Kiwis, no matter what the issue, we will find solutions. And I think the country will be really proud of whatever you do over there, because it's such an important occasion. And I've been to Gallipoli myself, not at Anzac Day, but as part of travels many years ago. And it's such a haunting place, and so I'm just rapt that even if you're there without some of the uniforms and things like that, at least you're there, and you'll do us all proud.
Look, I think that I'm sure you will do us proud, and as you've said, you've got a guitar.
Yes,
you know, got a couple of guitars, a beautiful a cappella waiata, and a strong haka.
Yeah,
you'll be fine,
John.
Yeah. Well, I think I would say that probably New Zealand's had tougher days on the Gallipoli
Peninsula
than not having a few uniforms. So it's all about the context, really. And the thing is, the Australians have really pitched in to help. And, you know, it's a very good example of the Anzac spirit, shoulder to shoulder, so to speak. And they're helping us. Everyone wants to help. And it will be something we all will be proud of. It just might be a little bit different.
Well, an honour to have you on, John. Kia ora, all the very best for the services over the service over there, and thanks for checking in on the panel.
Mm. Okay, really appreciate it.
That's John McLeod, the NZDF Gallipoli commemoration lead there. So, yes, things will proceed, as you said, Leonie and Shane. They will do us proud. It is 20 to 7, the panel, RNZ National. Time for I've been thinking, who wants to start? Shall we have Shane? Why don't you start today?
I've been thinking that regional New Zealand has a lot of really cool events, and one such event that I'm going to is the Featherston Bookdown Karukatea Festival, held in Featherston from the Friday the 10th to Sunday the 12th of May. The festival is a celebration of books, storytelling ideas, and the art and craft of books. 39 events, 77 presenters, and literary provocateurs. The centrepiece of this year's events include the famous fish and chip supper featuring Dame Susan Devoy, and a Saturday night gala with Moana Maniapoto, interviewed by Linda Clark, shout out, former RNZ presenter. And look, as I said, some 77 presenters. Kirsty Johnson, again, RNZ. What a talented woman. She's worked with James Holland, and they're talking about their book, The Crew Murders, the murders of Harvey and Jeanette Crew in the Pukekohe farmhouse in 1970 remains Aotearoa New Zealand's most famous cold case. And yeah, I'm making an appearance, facilitating a kōrero with Tamaiti, Moana Maniapoto, Te Māori Tau and Papawai Kaumātua Pauro Amson talking about Te Tiriti. But here's the cool thing, folks. The festival runs a young readers program for tamariki throughout the district. What better gift can you give a young person than the love of all things books? So some of the events have already sold out. Tickets for others are selling quickly. It's a great weekend. Come along, have a listen, buy a book. And if you're inclined, enjoy a glass of Wairarapa's Pinot Noir.
Usually I don't let promos like that go past, but because of Shane Te Pau and because it does sound good. And it's also because it's a festival that's just grown and grown and grown on its own steam over the years. Mm. It's really great. Kia ora, Shane. And hopefully one day I manage to get to it. But that's quite astonishing, isn't it? Particularly for a town, you know, of that size and all. Yeah, very cool. All right, Leonie Freeman, I've been thinking.
Yeah, so for me, I've been thinking tomorrow's Anzac Day, and I always think this is a really important time to reflect, and it gives us a chance for, you know, a lot of people go to services all around the country and reflect on those who have come before us with the wars and what they did and what they sacrificed. And Wallace, as you know, I've done a lot of work in our family history, and I wrote a book called Lest We Forget about my great uncle and my grandfather on my father's side, who both fought in World War One, and my great uncle on my mum's side, he was killed 4 days before his 21st birthday, and my grandfather was injured 6 weeks before the end of the war. Fortunately, survived and came home; otherwise, wouldn't be here. But you know, when you research what those men and women went through, you know, it's so humbling, and I just think it's so important that we take this opportunity to remember them. And it's that whole thing about lest we forget. And so another shout out to Defence Force in Gallipoli as well.
Good on you, Leonie. Kia ora. Leonie Freeman, Shane Te Pau are there. By the way, someone's just texted, traffic is terrible in Ponsonby and surrounding areas. A bit of traffic there for you. And now to this, another news, as sort of got people's attentions, particularly when we talked about it in the office. Imagine you're out on your morning walk in the wonderful suburb of Remuera, and at the entrance of the popular Orake Basin, you spy a big pile of doggy poos in the plastic bags. They're piled up where a bin used to be in what seems to be a protest of bin reduction. Since November of last year, the council has been removing bins with low historical uses to save about or just under $1.5 million a year. With us, Jason Valentine Burt, an Avondale resident and former principal who opposes bin reduction in his neighbourhood. We had him on a couple of months back. Jason, kia ora.
Kia ora, how are you tonight?
Very well, thanks for being on, Jason. What do you make of the a bit rude to make this pile of dog do in plastic bags, immature, not becoming of the very good people who live in Remuera?
Civil disobedience from the leafy suburbs. I'm intrigued. Normally it's a court injunction. no, would I do it? Would I leave my dog poos there? No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, same.
Do I understand why they are, you know, showing their displeasure with the council's decision? Yes, I do. You know, it's been very, very frustrating trying to get anything from the council in terms of reinstatement of bins where they actually are needed. And, you know, we've had this battle for the last, since we last spoke to you, really, to get some bins back in here in Avondale where they're needed by the schools with 3,000 pupils. And it's been a heck of a time. I should show you the paper trail one day.
Wow.
So I can understand why they are dissatisfied and showing their displeasure. Do I agree with how they're doing it? No, I don't.
This has become quite the civic issue in Auckland, a way of the council, Leonie, to save money, but people are clearly not happy. Do you support this type of protest, yes or no?
Look, first of all, I think, man, it's difficult for the council because they're under such pressure to cut costs. So you have to give them some credit for trying to find ways to save money. Obviously, maybe not all the bins that they're trying to cut, you know, like the one the gentleman was talking about in Avondale.
It's rubbish, Leonie.
Is appropriate. But I do think it's pretty disappointing that people are leaving rubbish by where a bin used to be. I just wouldn't do
you
that.
You wouldn't do it?
It's not, you know, I mean, there's other ways to protest than doing
that.
The
funny thing is the plastic bags are the green plastic bags that the council give you or leave out in areas. So the plastic bag holders are still there, but the doggy doo-doo bag boxes are not there. But, hey, look, it's been a little while. I wouldn't mind going back again. Been to Tokyo? No rubbish bins around.
Yeah.
Some of the cleanest streets in the world. Mm. You know,
do you know how much the fine is for littering in Japan? I mean, it is massive. It is a five-figure suburb.
I get that, but I think that it's more about also a culture, you know, and also if you go to many of our dock parks and that, these are the kaupapas, take your rubbish home.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I think we need to learn more of that and also recycle once we get home. We've got sort of plenty of opportunity to do that. And if you live in where I live, in Epsom, the bins are quite big, so there's plenty. There should be plenty of opportunity to take your rubbish home. And
be that as it may, I think I mentioned Jason and to you, Shane, you could engender a culture change, but in Jason's words, you're dreaming, mate.
Yeah,
you try.
It's a utopia.
It's utopian.
Yeah. Well, it's not that big a stretch, is it? Just to simply take.
Well, Jason can answer that.
Take your fish and chip paper home?
Is it, Jason?
Well, I think it is. I think it is a big stretch. I mean, here we are. We're living now in the climate change, you know, generation are coming up through. Going school strike for climate, and I've never seen such a messy lot of school kids, to be honest, in all my years.
Yeah.
I'd love them to actually take some responsibility for what's happening in their own local community and show their interest there.
And also, if you do the, say, some of the walks, if you go tramping, there's no way, you have to, whatever rubbish you take out. Yeah. There's nowhere to leave it.
They say, and leave your footprints.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. But the other thing is that if you don't have the bins, what you'll have is you'll have greater dumping, you know, and I know that, you know, the Manurewa local boards really got on top of the issue. But now the bins are no longer there. I think it might sort of rear its ugly ears again.
Right?
So, you know, you've got to get the balance right.
And it's probably a lot of things, you know.
Yeah.
So you've been working on this for a bit, Jason. Have you had any movement on this issue since you first raised? Have you been listened to?
Yeah, well, yes, to a degree. I mean, we have had two bins returned to our area around the school. But when I say returned, hold on a second, when I say returned, what they've actually done is they have uplifted two bins from other areas and put them here. They haven't brought removed bins back out of storage. They've just shuffled the deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, just up the road here from me, they actually moved a bin. I would say they had a crew of guys there and they moved a bin 20 metres. From one side of the road at a bus stop to the other side of the road outside a dairy. And they had a whole crew working on that for half a day. It's just ridiculous. Rather than just admit that they need to take some bins back out of storage.
Yeah, big response here. It's all very well for Shane and Epsom. I live in Oranga, rubbish everywhere. Ferguson Park has lost half their bins, says Tim. Claire in Ototahi says, I pick up rubbish in gutters, tossed out takeaways. Be a tidy Kiwi, the wildlife. We need closed bins. Open, overflowing bins, disgusting. So, yeah, quite the issue here, Jason. Well, nice to have you on. Keep up the good work.
Awesome. Yep, thank you for having me back.
Very good. Jason Valentine Burt there, Avondale resident, former principal, who opposes bin reduction in his neighbourhood. Are you seeing that where you are around the Motu, not just in Auckland? Now, a text here, State Highway 20 to airport is horrible. I'm going to miss my flight. So what are you seeing out in traffic at the moment? If you are safe and able to do so by text, do let us know. If you're at a standstill, not while you're driving, by the way. Another text, traffic chaos heading into Auckland from the airport. So, yeah, do stay safe. Mm. Well, you got anywhere to go after this, Shane?
Yeah, I've got to be in Mangere sort of bridge within the hour of leaving here.
Okay.
We'll give it a crack.
Well, it sounds like the airport's the difficult place, and I suppose everybody's flying out and taking a long weekend.
Yeah. And also a big response to whether or not you think that Christopher Luxon is displaying good leadership or bad leadership. Wallace Luxon acting decisively, utter nonsense. Just another big man trying to demonstrate he is boss, offers no real solutions to the serious problems both those demoted ministers were trying or not to deal with. He is shaping up to be another leader, simply acting the part, says someone. But there's quite a bit of support as well for Chris Luxon. And someone else says, actually, I quite like the idea of a massive skating rink. So you see, there's one person.
I think the idea is great. I'm just trying to figure out how we could make it financially feasible. So
I've always wanted to know, when they have these wonderful creative projects like building a big skating rink in a city, what drowns it? Is it actually the rates?
Well, a lot of it would depend on so many things, because if you think about Auckland, there's no skating rink in the city, right in the heart of the city.
Silo Park, not too far away.
But that's a park environment. So if you are thinking of it on a commercial site, because don't forget, this is owned by somebody. It's not it's not owned by the council or the government.
But I think such a big footprint, what you can't have is a deteriorating building that just looks uglier as time goes by.
Yeah, so you know, there's a lot of work to think about how you can do it, but it's still somebody's land and site, so it's trying to figure out. And you know, that's why I do give credit to the council. They were trying to come up with a solution, but it's a matter of, you know, something which would be quite defining there and provide a good outcome.
But more on the crash. State High 16 Northwestern motorway bound. There was a crash 4:50 p.m. due to a crash on State Highway 16. The middle right westbound lane was blocked after Rosebank Road. The crash has now been cleared of all lanes, and it'll take time for that congestion to ease. So that's...
You might be all right to Mingary then.
I'll do my best.
Yeah. Oh, this is a very nice text from Dave. Said, wasn't sure about this programming change, to be honest, Wallace, but it's kind of growing on me.
Nice.
Well, there you go. That's good for your ratings.
There you go. That's another list, wasn't it? Hey? Anyway, finally on the program with Shane Tipou and Leonie Freeman. Almost 12 years ago, two men started an enormous project to track down photographs of the almost 100,000 people who served with the New Zealand Expeditionary Force during the First World War. They've managed to collect, collate and index over 30,000 photographs, which is a very impressive effort, but it does leave 70,000 to go. With us, Phil Beattie, co-founder of the Onward Project, with us now. Kia ora, Phil.
Kia ora, Wallace.
What a wonderful, albeit enormous project. Congratulations on the work you've done so far. I want to know, how did this project come about?
Thanks, Wallace. Yes, it is a crazy big project. So myself and my co-collaborator and good friend, Matt Pomeroy, he had amassed a decent collection of photographs, majority of which are postcards. And they were basically just sitting in boxes. So we sort of talked about it and said, well, what can we do to make these available to the public? So that was the genesis, was his personal collection. And then very quickly from there, we went, okay, actually there's quite a few sources out there. There's quite a few museums, archives, et cetera, et cetera. So it sort of snowballed very quickly from his initial collection in 2012 when we started.
Shane, photographs, people who served, First World War, just ordinary people.
And young. 100,000? Look, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think our population was only about a million.
Yeah, 1.1 million. So it was 11% of the population.
11% of the population.
Yeah.
So, you know, this day and age, it'll be nearly a million people.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a very large, and it had a huge impact on society, as we know. Mm. But happily, photography was big, as big now as it is now. So, you know, everyone probably wanted their photograph taken. There was quite a lot of photographs taken. But of course, now 100 years plus later, we're trying to find them. It's a little bit more of a challenge. But Yeah, the project, we've gone through a lot of the published sources, so all the newspapers of the day would obviously publish a lot of the casualty photographs, the Weekly News, mm-hmm. the Weekly Press, those sort of. So we've gone through and indexed all those, and we have most of those courtesy of good libraries like Christchurch Library, Alexander Turnbull, etc. But really the key to this project, as we said, there's 70-odd thousand photographs we don't have, is sort of the largest archive, which are the families.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Amazing project. And just to add, I went on your website before this and I added my grandfather and my great-uncle. Oh, so there's two more photos. Nice.
Fantastic.
And I was just wondering, do you get access, because the Auckland Museum Online Cenotaph has quite good records as well, and people are adding photos in there. Is there any way you can get photos that you don't have from there? Is that...
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's lots of online sources. Mm. We have to be careful to make sure the identifications are correct, of course.
Oh, yes. Because,
yeah.
I promise mine are correct.
yes, absolutely. So we have compiled, because the key to this project also is knowing who to look for. So we need a very comprehensive nominal roll. So we've put together a very specific nominal roll. There's a lot of 97,500 odd names on it.
Yeah.
And so we know exactly who we're looking for. there's many sources. But the thrust for sort of this year, we've been sort of advertising a wee bit, was to really get it out to the families and just say everybody who served overseas, we would like it as part of the OMIC project. So
it's awesome.
Okay, so on that, while we have time, if someone's listening right now across the country, sitting on a photo at home that you are yet to collect of the 70,000, what do they do?
So the easiest way is to jump on our website, which is omicproject.co.nz. And you can there's an email on there, you can use that, or there's actually a submit function on the website itself, so you can actually upload through the website. We're also on Facebook, again, Onward Project, so probably the other two main sources, through the website or through Facebook. And we also appreciate that not everyone's an expert in scanning or, reproducing photographs, so we're very happy to talk one-on-one with people and help them with what they have. And the other point I wanted to quickly make is we're also looking to improve quality. So, for example, you might have your grandfather or great-uncle. We have already published as a newspaper shot, but you might have the original. Mm. And we will republish images in future volumes where the quality is improved, because we want to basically, we'd like to record the best quality image for future generations.
Phil, this
so
is so
no
good.
There's no problem with reproducing.
No, I think it is fantastic. Can I just ask a question? Do you have family or whānau that might not want to share because they think it's such a personal thing, and how do you deal with that?
That's a good question. We have pretty good response. We have had a couple of people that said they don't want to do it, but we don't. To be honest with you, we don't care that often. People who get in touch won't get in touch because they want their photograph to be shared. Mm. So I am sure there are people out there that just won't want to do that, but the vast majority do.
Yes.
And bearing in mind that the reason we print books is we want this to be an enduring legacy for future generations. So we print it, and then it's a centralised collection, if you will, of photographs for New Zealand's benefit. That's the premise, anyway.
That's fantastic. Onward Project. .co.nz, kia ora, Phil. And stay safe over the weekend. Here's a final text. 3 hours from Silverdale to Papakura. We still have to get to Coromandel. I'm stuck in a car with a singing husband and farting dogs. And on that note, have a great day of remembrance tomorrow, everyone. Leonie Freeman, Shane Tipo, kia ora to you.
Kia ora.
I'm Wallace Chapman. I'm with you till 8. Big thanks to my producer, Iana. Stay with us.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.